This is the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast. Your hosts, Sam Harris and Nicholas Farik, digest the most interesting, informative, and topical books, giving you their biggest insights. We expose different perspectives and tools to look at the world to make you wiser than yesterday.
Hello there, and welcome to the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast. My name is Nico. As usual, I'm happy to be joined by my good friend and co-host, Sam. And in this episode, we are, again, discussing the body, and more specifically, the breath. Sam and I have just finished the book, Breath, The New Science of a Lost Art, authored by James Nestor. And as we're talking about breath, I would like to ask you, dear listener, to try, during this podcast, breathe through your nose the whole time. So you're not going to speak, so try and breathe through your nose. We'll get to why that is very important and helpful for you. So as long as we talk, please do that, and you'll thank us by the end. Go ahead. Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, the book discusses breathing, and so it actually makes a case that no matter what you eat, how much you exercise, how skinny or young or wise you are, none of it matters if you're not breathing properly. And so according to the author, the missing pillar in health is breath. It all starts there. And so the book describes James Nestor's journey, discovering everything breath-related, and he finds that the science of breathing is really a lost art, because he discovers more in ancient burial sites, secret Soviet facilities, and yoga literature than in modern science labs. And so, yeah, the book is full of anecdotes on why breathing is so important and why we should be conscious about our breathing, because I think a lot of people have lived their whole lives without giving one second thought a thought to the way they breathe. And it's in this book, it shows that it is quite important and can be very powerful. So Sam, how did you like the book?
I really liked the book. I found his writing was quite nice, and just the stories of what he gets up to in sort of self-hacking and going into researching it was quite fun. Unlike the book last week about sleep, this book, I felt like I had a lot more questions scientifically, where I was like, is this really true? And I kind of wanted to get like a lot more facts. So like a statement of the greatest indicator of lifespan wasn't genetics, diet, or daily exercise, but lung capacity. I'm like, really? And I was always kind of thinking scientifically wise, as in, is he just sort of causation, correlation, like mixing these things up? And like, okay, if you are a healthy person and exercises more, you're just going to be breathing better anyway. And like, I just wanted to see a lot more of the actual science every time I was like hearing one of his different claims. But yeah, otherwise I really liked the book, and I did actually feel that where he was pushing you to go with it did actually sort of make lots of sense and feel better for doing it. So,
yeah, I fully agree. I made the mistake of reading some reviews before this episode. They might have influenced my final rating, but I saw a lot of comments on the fact that the book is mostly anecdotal and not very scientific, and a lot of people were saying, so yeah, I mean, if what you're saying is true, then please do some controlled trials, studies, and get published. So, I mean, doctors can start using these methods. And so I'd like to pick in on that a little bit, because I found that, to give you an example, I found that nutrition science, and I've had a lot of discussions with my girlfriend about this, because she has a doctorate in development economics focused on nutrition. And so I found that the science on nutrition doesn't really, like, it's not very clear on what is the right way to eat in general. And I feel like there's studies showing that, you know, you should go vegan, and there's other studies that show that you should have a balanced diet with meat and vegetables, etc. And so I find it hard to make a decision on that. And so I found that this book might be similar in that the human body is so complex that it's pretty hard to find conclusive evidence on some things. And in this case, it might be useful to look at the past and what ancient civilizations have found. And so what James Nestor finds is that there's quite a lot of different civilizations who have put a lot of emphasis on breath and And so they're all unrelated, but the fact that different civilizations that were not in contact all find similar things might mean that even though they can't be proven with current science, there might be something there. Does that make sense?
Yeah, definitely. And if you think about the human sort of pyramids of like essential physical needs, the first most important one that you literally have like 3 minutes before you'll die is breath. And then it's like water, then shelter, then sleep, then food, then exercise kind of thing of like what's going to affect your lifespan. So it is like the most important thing that you do the whole time. So it definitely bears some reflection on, and you think the amount of books there are on like diet and exercise, the fact that there's hardly anything on breath doesn't seem quite right actually, and that we don't really pay attention to it. So yeah, I definitely feel he's onto something good.
So let's start, and I think the most important point that he makes in the book is the difference between mouth and nose breathing. And so that, dear listener, is why I ask you to breathe through your nose, because he makes a case that we developed to breathe through our nose. So the air that goes through our nose takes a completely different path than the one that goes through our mouths. And there's a reason why it has evolved that way. So it gets like filtered, it gets humidified or dehumidified, it gets a correct temperature. And so it's way better. And so the book actually, for quite a big part of it, describes his experiment. So he and another scientist did an experiment on themselves. And so in that experiment, in the first week, they plugged their noses, which meant that for a whole week, they could only breathe through their mouths. And so during that week, they measured as good as everything. So they measured blood oxygen levels, stress levels. They did exercise. They measured their sleep, how they snored or if they snored, and if they had sleep apnea.
Apnea.
Yeah. So they did that for a week. And then the week after, they focused on breathing through the nose only. And then they did the whole shebang again. So they measured everything and they found that there's a huge difference in everything, and it felt way better as well. They stopped snoring, they had almost no sleep apnea, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, it sounded great for them and kind of compelling. I really wanted to try doing the experiment. It sounded like quite a lot of fun as well, and the antics they got up to.
I guess.
But I also a bit more intrigued around how you managed to make yourself only breathe through your nose, because of like plugging your nose means you can only breathe through your mouth, easy. But when you're trying to only breathe through your nose, you can't plug your mouth because you do have to speak and eat in these things. And it's just a bit harder if you get a bit like snotty or any of that kind of stuff. It's a harder passage to always keep open, which I guess is part of the challenge and why we just default to mouth breathing.
Yeah, he also makes a case, because I agree with you, if your nose gets stuffed, it feels like it's impossible to clear it, right? But that being said, I've actually, without reading or hearing of the book, I've started, so I used to breathe through my mouth most of the time when I was younger. And in the past years, I've started breathing through my nose. And so I think in the past 2 years, I've only had a blocked nose like a handful of times. And it's most annoying when you're in bed, right? When you're trying to sleep and you got a really dry mouth because you're breathing through it the whole time. And that hasn't even happened to me 10 times in the past 5 years. And so I think it's like a muscle. And the more you breathe through your nose, the easier it starts getting. And so I think that's a solution. And so what I believe they did while sleeping, for example, they used tape to tape their mouths shut so they could only breathe through their noses.
Oh,
and I think it was tough the first nights. So when you're used to breathing through your mouth, it feels like you can't get enough air in through your nose. But so the first night they could only do it like have the tape for 1 hour, and next night 3 hours. And then after a few nights, they were able to do it the whole time.
Yeah, I really want to try doing that just for the fun
you
of
should.
It.
You should.
Have you tried it?
Well, I mean, I believe because of the book, I believe that nose breathing is better. And I think I always I am a nose breather anyway, so I don't think it would change much. But I think my girlfriend, for example, I think when she sleeps, she breathes through her mouth. So I think it might be useful to get some mouth tape and see if we can change that.
Weird images of you just like taping your girlfriend's mouth shut.
Yeah, absolutely. Anyway, so yeah, I'm sure. Yeah.
Anyway.
Cool. Yeah. So the main points of the book was mouth versus nose breathing. Nose breathing is better. And so he makes a lot of anecdotes of people that got cured from their asthma and other illnesses just by changing the way they breathe. Not a lot of scientific studies, as we already discussed, but the anecdotes, I think, indicates that it's probably better to breathe through your nose.
Yeah, it goes quite deep into even, like I said, around try doing it when you're running and things that actually, I think one of the best ever marathon runners from like the early 1900s or something, like the 1940s, 50s, would train and run the entire thing, only breathing through his nose, and just like completely outpaced the entire competition. And then an entire Olympic training squad, like a few years later, started doing all of their training only breathing through their nose, and then they kind of were like the most successful. Oh no, this is an Olympic swimming squad did it, not breathing through their nose, but just prolonging their breath. So part of the reason why he's saying it's through your nose is because it just slows down the rate of breathing and you breathe more deeply. And so if you're swimming, normally people try and do like three strokes and then like breathe one side, three strokes, breathe the other side. And he's like, well, actually it's better to try and push that to sort of seven strokes or something and actually really breathe more deeply and hold that breath for a longer time, because you're basically you're using the oxygen more efficiently is what he's saying is how you should do that. And you just have less short breathing, which is more stressful for your body, and more deep breathing where you use the air in a better way and become a more efficient human at like dealing with carbon dioxide. And I think it just changes your stress levels in general, because as you have like slightly higher carbon dioxide, it just makes you more stressed. But if you are able to like cope with that, like the receptors don't get stressed out by that level of CO2, you don't get so panicky and you're just a less stressed human, which is part of the reasons why you then have a better life, besides the other benefits of it, like being cleaned as it goes through your nasal passages, which was kind of cool. I kind of bought into that as a general philosophy. I did think that having longer breaths to sort of calm you out, down and chill you out, and actually I was able to carry on doing my things once I got over the initial hurdle of feeling a bit like, oh, can't deal with that. Because I used to do a lot of when I was lifeguarding, I used to try and push how long I could breathe for, and I found I could really prolong it a lot more and did just feel really calm the entire process. So yeah, I like that.
I found that for me, it's still really hard to breathe through my nose while exercising. So I do CrossFit, and it gets quite intense with heart rates permanently above 180. And I found that at that point, I cannot breathe through my nose. I've been trying to, but it's hard. And then in the book, he describes experiments on specifically CrossFitters that breathing through the nose actually helps. So I think I need some practice there still. So what I'm going to do is in the future, I'm going to try and start just breathing through my nose. And once I can't, I'll switch to mouth breathing. And hopefully at some point be able to do the whole thing while breathing through my nose. It should help my performance. So I'll be able to update you on that.
Yeah, I'm currently, the same, but for running, where you don't, unless you're doing sprinting, you don't get quite to the same level of heart rate unless you're like really, really pushing it, but it's kind of hard. But I've definitely found that I can kind of do it if I really concentrate. But I get a bit of the issues with like the blocked nose thing, because it's not too warm at the moment and you start getting a bit snuggy. It's like a kind of slight permanent thing going on, and you're like, oh, for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
Get a bit self-conscious. But I think the more I've been pushing through it, I've sort of been able to carry on. And so I do really want to see if I can keep this going, because I've just signed up to do like an ultra marathon in May, which I'm quite excited for. And if I can get better at using oxygen more efficiently and breathing less and having a more chilled out sort of general system, because I can just take on more oxygen in a more efficient way, then it makes a lot of sense that I could be running better. So I do want to do it.
Absolutely.
I guess that leads into what I feel is like the hardest thing about the book, because on the book last week about sleep, it really makes you so concerned about doing it that you just prioritize sleep massively. And it's quite like an easy trigger. Like, I know what my sleep is during the day and when I'm doing enough of it. Whereas breathing, I don't feel quite such the urgency to fix this, although I do want to do it. But I don't feel like I've got so many of the tools to go and do it. Like, I really need to like put a plan together myself and then sort of hack myself for the next 2 weeks of just making myself only do breath work. But I haven't written that anywhere. There's no one like checking me in. So I'm not sure how I'm going to keep that. I feel like I'm probably going to forget in a few weeks' time, and then we'll chat and I'll be like, oh yeah, breathing through my nose and stuff. So I'm not sure if it's going to have the effect, unless I think there's a lot more, it's just harder to put into action without doing something kind of really weird, like taping your entire mouth up and stuff.
True. Yeah. What I've been doing in the past days is like, I have moments in my day where I do something and I try to focus on my breathing during these times. So I try to stretch using an app every day. It takes about 20 minutes. And during stretching, I've actually found that breathing really slowly can help your stretching quite a lot. And so what I've been doing now is breathe 8 seconds in, hold for 8 seconds, and then breathe out 16 seconds. And so that way you breathe about twice a minute. And I've been doing that during stretching, and it's been helping. Like, I've been able to get so much deeper using that way of breathing. And so that's been super useful. And so that's 20 minutes where I'm consciously breathing slow. And then I also, straight after that, I meditate. And during meditation, I try to do the, you know, the healthy breathing. We can go into that in a second. And that is 6 seconds in, 6 seconds out through the nose, very calmly. And so these are two moments in my day, which is half an hour in which I'm consciously breathing slower. And I found it quite nice also, like, just during these times as well, to just relax.
Mm, yes. Pretty helps with, like, the practice of meditation in general when you are focusing on the breath and nothing else.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Happy for
so,
you.
So, yeah, thanks, man. So let's talk about that a bit more. So he makes a case that if like, the healthiest breath, and he found that by visiting different Indian tribes in the US. So the healthiest way of breathing he found was 5.5 seconds in, 5.5 seconds out. Because that results in 5.5 breaths per minute, something like that, and about 5.5 liters of air taken in. And so he found that that was the optimal breathing pattern for, you know, just throughout the day. And so if, you know, if ever, like right now, if you're listening to this, it'd be useful for you to breathe like that. So 5.5 seconds in, 5.5 out. I found that if I'm doing something, I count faster in my head than in real life. So I rounded it up to 6. So you might want to do that as well. But if you're ever in doubt about, okay, how fast should I breathe? Just go for that. So Sam, if you, maybe you should like find a way to connect this breathing pattern to certain actions you do every day. I don't know. Maybe when you're like cooking or something, just try and think, okay, when I'm cooking, I'm going to breathe through my nose in this kind of pattern. When you're lying in your bed trying to fall asleep, or when you're, you know, watching TV, I don't know, when you're listening to a podcast, or I got kicked out.
Weird. How did you get kicked out? Maybe too many suggestions and passive aggressive my side. It was just like, you know what? I want my freedom. Don't take every single moment of my life just to like trigger me to think about my breath. Yeah.
So we're still recording, right? Okay, cool. We'll cut that out. Yeah. I don't know. What was the last thing I said that you heard?
You were talking about like when I do my cooking, when I...
Yeah, just in general.
Doing a podcast, anything, basically.
Exactly.
Like,
so
you
whenever...
just recounted my entire life. And like at any point in my life, just breathe through my nose, which was good.
Yeah. I think for me, what I found is we usually watch like a Netflix show in the evening. And during that, like I try to... When I'm lying down or sitting, I try to just breathe slowly. That's been nice. So, yeah.
Trying to trigger myself more. Nice.
Exactly.
Maybe I'm just going to put it on like, a home screen in my phone or something. Is it like a... Every time you see it, it's sort of just like a good reminder.
Cause, yeah. It's a good idea. What I also found nice is that at the end of the book, there are some breathing exercises. Pretty cool. I found it very useful. It's just this, I think, Scandinavian dude who goes through a bunch of breathing exercises with you. Some of them are useful to relax. Some of them are useful to, you know, to just have all day. Some of them help you unplug your nose, etc. And so, yeah, it was pretty nice to have that. It's something, it takes like half an hour to do all of them, but they're specific ones and they have specific purposes. And I really like that.
Yeah, it's fun to do as in. If you feel like you really wanted to do it already, you don't need to read the whole book at all. You could just read a blog post, listen to this, and be like, oh, okay, if this is what I need to do, and then just follow those exercises. But it does help having read the book to like motivate you a bit more.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the other things he speaks about is the whole area of like human evolution and chewing and like the way our brains have changed and how we become so much worse at breathing because of this. And I found that quite interesting, the way our mouths have changed and we've got sort of too many teeth for the size of our mouth and we just struggle to breathe as much. But then I wasn't sure why having a bigger mouth made it easier to breathe through your nose 100%. I don't know if I was just being stupid whilst I was reading it. And the other thing was that he spoke about a whole scientific study where like all of these different tribes and things that were eating much more real food were way healthier, that they thought was originally down to like them getting all their vitamins, but then they realized that it was actually just they were chewing a lot more because it was like tougher food of different sorts, and that they then developed these better mouths. But then they never mentioned the fact that, like, okay, could they just do a study on people that they just got to use chewing gum for like a year or something? And I don't know why they didn't suggest that that was a solution, if you could just chew a bit better. Mm-hmm. Or I wasn't too sure. I was a bit confused.
Yeah, so the point he makes is that ancient humans, and I always, like, I've said this before, if you want to convince me of something, just relate it to evolution. And in this case, he says that ancient humans used to be chewing on leaves and raw meat and stuff quite a long time during the day, like 4 hours or something. And so today, everything we cook, like, is very, very soft, and so we barely have to chew anymore. And that resulted in underdeveloped jaws and cheeks. And so, as far as I understood, our jaws are underdeveloped in width. And so if you chew more, your jaws become wider, which creates more space at the top of your mouth, because there's not enough space at the top of our mouth. And if we chew more, it becomes wider, and that creates more space above the roof of your mouth, so in your airways up there. And that's supposed, I think that would help you breathe through your nose more efficiently. And I find it quite interesting, because this is, again, one of these things that people just assume that, which is normal, which is, like, almost everyone I know has braces or has had braces. And also, almost everyone I know has had to have their wisdom teeth removed. And both of these are signs from, like, it does make a lot of sense that everyone's teeth are crooked, and we would have, like, issues if they're, like, with extra teeth growing later on in our lives. It doesn't make any sense at all. And so I really believe that we don't chew enough. And he shows it by looking at ancient skulls. Found that, you know, if he looks at skulls from people living 3,000 years ago, all of them had perfectly straight teeth and no issues. And then today we're just softies, man. So we eat soft stuff, too highly calorie dense, and this results in smaller mouths and all these issues. And so one interesting point I also found is that, so everyone of my generation has had braces, but he says that it's way more useful to try, if you're using, you know, mechanical devices to alter the mouth, it's way more useful to try and widen the mouth instead of just making the teeth straight and keeping the mouth as it is. And so he says that in a few years, everyone's going to have, you know, wider mouths and these types of alterations instead of just making the teeth straight, because having a wider mouth will make the teeth straight as a result, and also improve breathing, etc. So yeah, I find it interesting. And actually, for that reason, I've now started chewing chewing gum. So I have I have chewing gum on my desk. So I'm after dinner, after every meal, I try to just pop one in and just chew. Yeah.
And that's a good reminder, because if it's something you kind of go back to, like, oh, I've got chewing gum, and say, like, okay, I should be breathing through my nose and stuff. So
I haven't done that, but that's a very good point. Yeah, absolutely. Wow. You know, minty flavor should, like, trigger, like, okay, let's breathe slowly through our nose. That's a good point.
Mm. Cool. So, yeah, I agreed with everything you just said, and wish that I did not have my wisdom teeth removed and that my braces were more around making my jaw bigger. Damn, mm-hmm. Bit late now.
Yeah. Not too late, though. He describes that he had surgery, actually. So he had, like, not really surgery, but he had a device planted between, like, in the top of his mouth to widen it. And he gained, like, what was it, something insane, a lot of extra bone in his mouth, which also resulted in him breathing better. Just by having a device that widens the mouth, you know, a little bit every day, something like that. Pretty crazy. So it's still possible, but it sucks as an adult, apparently.
Yeah, I was quite interested in that part. And also he talks about, like, surgery for nose, because my one nostril is, like, really, I basically breathe entirely through my left nostril, mm-hmm. and my right one doesn't do that much. And I wasn't sure if I can, like, fix that through more of the different nasal breathings, or if I should actually really spend more time going to the doctors and be like, hey, can I get this sort of fixed? Because he sort of says, like, try to not do it surgery as much as possible, but it is, like, quite an important thing. So if there is something you can do to get it fixed, that would be good. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I'm going to try things, see what happens. It's has always been a strange one. And it is really kind of annoying when you're doing, like, the meditation and stuff, and you're like, oh, I'm not really, like, I get a bit lost on like what's going on with my different nostrils as opposed to thinking about breathing as such. Yeah, weird. Especially when like the good nostril gets blocked, but like the other one isn't blocked, which just doesn't work anyway. You're like, oh, bloody hell.
Yeah, I found
anyway, my problems.
One of the things I'll also remember is I didn't know that. So there's erectile tissue inside our noses.
Yeah, that was so interesting.
Yeah, so the same erectile tissue that's in our penises is actually also in our noses. And that actually decides through which nose hole, through which nostril you're breathing. I didn't know that. I actually didn't even realize that you're at any point in time, or almost any point in time, you're only breathing mainly through one nostril. And that switches throughout the day. And apparently the right nostril breathing is like more energizing. And the left nostril breathing is more relaxing. That's what I took away from the book. And so I actually noticed, usually when I wake up in the morning, I tested it. I just feel through what nostril I'm breathing, and it's usually the left. And after sports, it's usually the right. So, and it switches throughout the day. And when you feel you're breathing through your right nostril, it's very hard to only breathe through to your left one. If you try to close it, it's very hard. So I found that very interesting. And I think if you want to learn more, he didn't go into it that much in this book. But I feel like, you know, people who can like switch from left to right, you know, in an instant, that might be useful for some cool life hacks. Just don't know which ones.
Yeah. And certainly doing any of that kind of stuff, I think it's quite calming and helps remove you from the moment when you're going down like the whole Buddhism side of like not reacting to your emotions and these things. And he also goes into like panic attacks and just general anxiety and stuff is quite related to fear, and which is actually related to like CO2 and stuff in your body. So they did studies on someone that had lost their ability to have fear normally, like through brain surgery, and just wasn't getting scared by stuff. But then they found that if they up their CO2 levels, suddenly they'd still suddenly start getting scared about stuff that they just weren't normally scared about. And then found that they could actually sort of help people not be scared by finding ways to stop their response to CO2 levels and things. And also, if you're about to have a panic attack, you instead of just breathing more, where you're just trying to fight for air, but you're actually breathing really shallowly, so you're never actually even getting air into your lungs because you're breathing so small and frequently that it's like nothing actually happens, there's no cycle of air. It is much better to do the complete opposite of what you're thinking of, trying to struggle to breathe, and actually just breathe in once and just stop breathing and just like hold your breath, because like all of the there's a whole like lot of oxygen that goes into your lungs, it just sits there and sort of will cycle. And if you can just breathe, so instead of telling people to kind of like breathe into a bag or just try and breathe deeply, you should just try and get them to breathe once. And that's actually like a way more effective way, which is something that I'd never been told before. But I kind of, now that I think about it, I think it would be really useful because of one, like oxygen, and also just the sort of the stop and concentrate and the panicking side that you have would be a really good way to like just ground you and sort of stop you from thinking about all like the crazy other stuff that's going on, and be like, okay, actually, just this person here, all I need to do is think about your breath, and it's a nice way to relax yourself. So a top tip for if you're about to have a panic attack, or if you're with someone that's sort of panicking a lot, is just sort of get them to hold their breath and count to 10.
Yeah, he makes a case that CO2 is actually really important. And so CO2 is quite often seen as a waste product and something that you need to get out of your body quite fast. But he found that a lot of very effective treatments and also a lot of very effective training is focused about maximizing CO2 and maximizing your ability to, you know, to have CO2 or to allow CO2 in your blood. And so there's quite a lot of exercises that he proposes is that you try to breathe out as much as you can, as long as you can, which is going to feel horrible. I've tried it. It's horrible. But it's going to spike your CO2 levels, and in the long run, it's going to help you in physical performance. So I found that really interesting. What I also found super interesting was that we actually lose weight through exhaled breath. So 85% of our weight loss comes to breathing out CO2. And I found that insane. So I always thought, like, if you lose weight, you basically, you know, you lose it by going to the toilet or sweating it out. But apparently most of it is just through the breath, man.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It makes sense because you breathe in oxygen and you breathe out carbon and oxygen, and you're the thing that's made out of carbon.
Holy and, have you studied biology?
So it's just chemistry. Yeah, I studied biology, but that was more from like the basic chemistry stuff. When
fair enough. You
think
yeah.
About it, but yeah,
yep.
It is kind of cool. That's why. Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, as you just said, that's why you sort of lose weight over time. It's you. Yeah, you don't just lose weight from like liquids and things. They're kind of a normal balanced level of stuff. It's just the amount of like energy tissues in your body that you've turned into something else. So if you think of, I know when you're burning anything, as in like you burn energy in your body, the same as like a fire, like a log burns, it's sort of, a log disappears because of it gets combined with oxygen and the carbon from the log disappears. So it's the same as your body, you're literally burning your body when you do respiration. It's cool.
Mm-hmm. All right. So yeah, that's everything for me. Something else you'd like to add, or should we?
No, rating. We wrapped that up well. We tried to plan this episode a bit more rather than me just sort of coming out with random things like, oh, another tangent, oh, another little thing. So
probably didn't notice.
Trying to be a bit more good. Yeah. Go us, learning.
Yes. All right, Sam. Ratings.
I went with a 6 because. Like I said, I think it's super important, but I feel like I didn't get the crazy urgency, and there's a lot more questions around the science, and I'd have liked it to have been a bit more factual and less anecdotal, and I'd have liked a better way of implementing the things, perhaps. So I thought it potentially really awesome, but could easily get forgotten, and yeah. So that's my 6.
Okay, I'm going to give it an 8. Because I find it pretty interesting. I'm not opposed to anecdotal evidence compared to scientific evidence when it comes to things that science hasn't completely figured out yet. And I also feel, in comparison to the previous book that we read about sleep, is that this opens a door to like potential really cool and interesting stuff. Where if you read some of the things that some people that have mastered their breathing have done, it's quite insane. You know, people that, you know, can make their like extremities, like 1 foot, like boiling hot and the other one really cold, or others that can just sit in the snow and just melt all the snow around them just by, you know, increasing their temperature by breathing. If you look at Wim Hof, you know, the Dutch guy that has found like a breathing manner which allows him to, you know, swim under ice and all that crazy stuff. I feel like there's a lot of interesting stuff to find here. And when about the sleeping part, it's like, okay, we figured it out. We have to sleep more. That's pretty much it. And in this, I feel like there's like a whole adventure to go on to explore, things to try out, which is why I like the book as well. So yeah, that's explains my 8.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I agree with what you said. I guess I feel like I want to just do the Wim Hof method, like go to like a day workshop and just force myself to do those things more than like reading the book or mm-hmm. Also, like you said, my mum learned Reiki. She's like a beta course, but she can, her hands, she can channel to be like, literally feels like you've got an oven touching you.
Really?
Within like the space of like 10 seconds. It's so weird. It's like the craziest thing.
Wow.
Yeah. And I would love to kind of get better at that, like body mastery and stuff, because I get like cold hands and things, and if I could just sort of focus a bit more and just channel like warmth into my,
I should
like,
teach that to my girlfriend, because man, when it's cold and we're in bed in at night, that's oof. Yeah, cold hands of death is what I call it. That's really cool.
Well, maybe it is time to be taping up her mouth.
Yeah,
get
exactly.
It back finally.
Exactly. Okay, you've convinced me.
Maybe it'll help warm my hands up. I don't think that's what it's for.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Cool. So as a quick summary of the core ideas, the book tells you to breathe through your nose, to breathe slowly. The ideal breathing rate is 5.5 breaths per minute. So 5.5 in and 5.5 out. Long exhalations are particularly beneficial. And rapid breathing is generally harmful. So although if you do this consciously, it could be beneficial as well. As our next book, Sam and I will be reading the book Lifespan, Why We Age and Why We Don't Have To, written by Dr. David Sinclair. Yeah, maybe there we'll also, it'll also talk about a bit about breathing. I guess we'll see. So looking forward to that. See you next week.
Yeah, it'd be pretty funny if you just read this book, well, the sleep book and this book, and then like lifespan's like, oh, nothing to do with either of those things.
Yeah, but indeed. Anyway, so yeah.
Cool. I guess I'll stop going on tangents and let us just finish the episode. Looking forward to lifespan.
Yes.
Join us next week. Cheers. Episode over. Boom.
Hey there, Nico here, your second favorite host of the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast. Sam and I would like to get some feedback from you. So what we're going to do from now on is each episode, we're going to select one random comment from the past weeks, and we will give them a free electronic version of the book that we've just read. So if you like what we are doing, or if you don't like what we're doing, or if you have a comment or a question, just reach out and we might be in touch. Cheers.
Thank you for listening to our podcast. As you know, we are doing this to try and help you get smarter. Well, I have another project for podcast listeners just like you who want to be smart. Nico and I learned so much from reading the same things together and discussing them, and I wanted there to be a tool that made it easy for anyone to listen to the same podcasts and books together with their friends. So I'm building the app Syncify, which does just that. It connects you with your friends in the app, listen to the same things at the same time, or create shared playlists and work through them at your own pace. You can share comments and highlights of your favorite bits, and become smarter by seeing what your friends think around the same content that you enjoy. As a bonus, it also helps with your mental health and reduces isolation. Personally, I hate publishing my life on social media, which I find all rather antisocial, and I don't go out of my way to phone a friend for no reason other than the fact I feel lonely. I do love doing things with other people, and having my friends listen to the same things is really awesome. I mean, I used to speak to Nico like once a year before we started this book club together, and now we talk all the time because we're just doing something together. So do yourself a favor and sign up for the Syncify app at syncifyapp.com, and I really hope it helps. Thanks a lot for listening. If you enjoyed the show or learned anything new, be sure to share it with your friends. And I just can't tell you how great it is if you were to happen to leave a review on iTunes. These really do help quite a lot. If you have any questions or books that you'd like us to read, feel free to reach out to us through the website, wiserpod.com, or reach out to us on LinkedIn. And just keep loving and keep learning, and ideally, keep listening. Big love from Sam and Nico, and the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast.